FBI is still gathering the facts about what happened in San Bernardino, but here's what we know. The victims were brutally murdered and injured by one of their co-workers and his wife. Muslim Americans are our friends and our neighbors, our co-workers. So far, we have no evidence that the killers were directed by a terrorist organization overseas or that they were part of a broader conspiracy here at home. If we're to succeed in defeating terrorism, we must enlist Muslim communities as some of our strongest allies rather than push them away through suspicion and hate. Muslim Americans are our friends and our neighbors, our co-workers.
Together.
Radio.
Underground. We have audio, no video.
Radio Free V-Day.
This is a pirate transmission from District 13 with a message.
Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Muslim apologist has spoken, addressing the nation and telling us that we should all just get along. Well, this is the Voice of the American Readout, episode 1541, coming out of an amazing week in America. We're seeing this continuous shifting in our nation, in our psyche, and we are not the same nation that we were by any means. Sad as it is to say, but yes, I did endure the speech. Obama from the Oval Office speaking and addressing what he believes are his solutions to ending terrorism. He did call it terrorism, but I took some notes, and I know a lot of you guys want to hear what I have to say, and I did take some notes, but it was hard to endure. Here is something that I want you guys to keep in mind. He's saying we have to be careful so this does not turn into an America versus Islam thing, but this is America versus Islam. This is Islam versus the rest of the world to establish a global caliphate. Even though ISIS represents a small sliver of Islam, they have an increasingly growing support base. Those Muslims in Europe, where they are already dominating, where they increase in numbers, they incrementally become what we're being sold as radicalized. No, they are just living up to the word of the Quran, which tells them, orders them to do those things that they are carrying out. And even the older generation, which is largely moderate Muslim, are being replaced by the next younger generation who are in their teens and in their 20s now, who are the ones that are stepping up, increasingly willing to carry out jihad on the West, in America, and Europe. Islam is antithetical to Americanism, as we've covered. But Obama's calling for the halt of firearm sales to those on the no-fly lists. Now, the arbitrary no-fly lists, where we've found prominent members of society, senators, citizens, those who have had no ties to any type of radical anything, are being found their names on the no-fly lists. And trying to get that off is just, it's a mess. So anybody who could be potentially extremist could find themselves on the no-fly list. This is their strategy. This is how they're going to try to carry out disarming American citizens. You're going to see an increasingly number a large growing number of American citizens with their names on the no-fly list. He says, how is it possible, or is it's insane, that we can have somebody on the no-fly list and they can go buy a gun? So he's calling for anybody whose name is on the no-fly list should be barred from possessing or purchasing firearms. But see, that's not the solution here. To prevent the situation that happened in San Bernardino, California. Because we have no indication that I've seen that they are on a no-fly list. On top of that, it was their neighbor who purchased the firearms. So how does that argument fly? How in the world can somebody on the no-fly list turn around and buy a firearm? That's not even relevant in this case. They weren't on the no-fly list. And the person who purchased the firearms wasn't on a no-fly list. It was somebody else. It was their neighbor, who incidentally checked himself in, self-admitted himself into the psychiatric ward, which we're going to talk about. And, well, maybe I just did. I was going to talk about in the news and commentary. Is it possible that was our number three man? Remember, yesterday when I interviewed Glenn Tate on ACN, go back and listen to that. We had a great interview, great discussion and analysis on the events that unfolded this week. Go back and listen to that from yesterday. It was a great discussion. We talked about stuff that I'm not going to get into today because we already talked about it. So if you haven't listened to that, I want to encourage you to go back and do that. But he spent a lot of time, Obama, tonight talking in this Oval Office address. Only, what, three since he's been in office? Or this was number three? Very rare. But one of the tactics is we're going to cut off ISIS, ISIL's funding, financing, among several other strategies that he outlined. And we're working with Turkey to seal their borders. But what's interesting is that Turkey, according to several sources, Turkey is purchasing oil from ISIS. So what are you going to do about that, Mr. Obama? Got themselves painted into quite the corner because now Turkey, which we're supposedly backing and supporting, their NATO members, buying oil from ISIS, and we're vowing to cut off the financing for ISIL and ISIS. But we're working with Turkey. This is so much smoke and mirrors and lies. He wants to make it harder to buy powerful firearms, tougher screening, and nobody on a fly list, no fly list, should be able to buy a gun. Well, what about Senator Kennedy when he was found to be on the no fly list? What about, and he went on further to say, how is it possible that somebody, that a terror suspect can turn around and legally buy a firearm? Well, I have the same question. How could somebody who is a terror suspect be able to buy a firearm? If they're a terrorist suspect, why are they not locked up? How is it possible that the only mechanism for stopping suspected terrorists is our no-fly list? Many of the people that are on the no-fly list are not terror suspects. And if they are terror suspects, why aren't they getting snatched up? This is going to be the vehicle to take them where they want to go, and that's to disarm Americans. You're going to see increasingly more and more and more Americans with their names on the no-fly list. That's what's coming. But in the meantime, we got to be responsible and reject discrimination. When did discrimination become a bad word? If you make a choice based on any bias that you have, could be your upbringing, your values, your whatever it is, oh, it could be the Bible. It says don't be unequally yoked. What if a Christian woman has a Muslim man that says, I want to marry you, and she says, no, I can't. Well, you're discriminating. You are discriminating. Even if there's not an ounce of hate in you, you're following according to the dictates of your conscience and God's word, and says don't be unequally yoked. So you say, well, I'm, as a Christian woman, I'm not going to marry a Muslim man because that's incompatible. Well, you're discriminating. We need to get rid of discrimination at all costs, even to the detriment of the security of our nation. Ask the people in Europe, in Denmark, in England, France, Germany, Norway, Sweden. Ask them how that's working out, not being able to discriminate. It's incompatible. That's all there is to it. Islam is incompatible with American values. But they say if you reject Islam, then you're betraying American values for religious freedom. But we've already talked about this. I mean, we've hashed it over so many times. When Islam gets to where it wants to be, there will be no religious freedom, period. So, I mean, we've seen the examples of that all over the world. We're seeing it today. If you watch the news, the headlines. Meanwhile, firearms purchases are going through the roof, breaking records. Doesn't matter what comes from the president's pulpit. People are following the dictates of their own conscience, and they are arming themselves like Europeans are wishing that they could do. And in places where they can, you can't get a firearm because they're selling out. There's something inside of you that tells you there's an increased threat level and I should probably do something to secure the safety of my family. Regardless of what somebody in a suit says on primetime TV. And the other thing that he said, there shouldn't be a religious test. This is a new buzzword that this pulled out is a historical. It is from the founding fathers era, the beginning of this country. There were arguments from those who said there should and there should not be a religious test. These are all Christian men who are having this discussion as far as what denomination you belong to and so on. But while this president is saying there should not be a religious test. We cannot just keep people out because they're Muslims, because that's un-American. That's betraying our values. We need to bring all these people in, and there shouldn't be a test for a religious test. There shouldn't be a religious test. But out of 132 immigrants brought into the country last month, not one of them was a Christian. He also said in his speech that the vast majority of those persecuted by Muslims or by ISIS and extremist Muslims are other Muslims. Not true. It's Christians. Whether it's from Boko Haram, or somewhere else in Africa, whether it is from the Abu Sayyaf in the Philippines or Al Qaeda, it is Christians that are being persecuted around the world. Those are the vast majority. And the things that they're doing to them of course, ISIS is just killing anybody who won't join them. That much is true. But they are going after Christians with zeal. In Egypt, in Libya, they're hunting Christians down. But there shouldn't be a religious test to bring people into our country that are fleeing for their lives, right? That's why 132 immigrants brought in last month, every single one of them were Sunni Muslim. But there's no religious test because that just wouldn't be right. So let's bring in all the Sunni Muslims, not a Christian to be found. So the deception continues. All right, let's get into the news and commentary brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days Book Series. This is episode 1541. Thank you so much for joining us and tuning in to the voice of the American Redoubt. If you're out there in occupied territory, outside the wire, feeling pretty isolated and alone, you're not alone. There are many patriots all around and all around you. Now, the news and commentary is brought to you by Glenn Tate. And once again, I want to remind you to go back and listen to the interview of our discussion and analysis from this week. Also want to remind you that the book, Land of Promise, The Formation of a Christian Nation, what that might look like, and some of James Rawls' theories about what a proper establishment of a government, you know, instilling the maximum amount of liberty for the citizens. Very interesting. I'm going through that, and I'm about ready to write a review. I think it is definitely very thought provoking, especially in this time when we could be faced with the rebuilding of some sort of a principles of freedom and liberty in the future. If this all crumbles and we rebuild, some pretty thought provoking and viable, components of a new nation you might want to build into it. So anyway, just something to think about there. Check it out. Whenever something's going on, you always want to make sure that while that hand's waving in front of your face, you want to look to see what the other hand is doing. Negotiators from 195 countries agreed last Saturday on a blueprint deal aimed at reducing global carbon emissions and limiting global warming. The green cult marches forward, a significant but far from conclusive step in the multinational effort to keep climate change in check. We should get the brainwashers in check is what we should do. But the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change posted on its website a copy of the draft agreement, which officials have been working on intensively for some time. I have several thoughts over the stuff that have happened this week. We talked about some of those yesterday. I just want to encourage you guys to stay the course. I don't have a whole lot for news and commentary. It's just, you know, because I wanted to, you know, talk a little bit about Obama's speech and some of the things that he had to say. I had a couple thoughts. I could, you know, spend a whole show on it, but we'll talk about other things. Speaking of the fight against the Hijra, the expansion of Islam through immigration as part of their doctrine for conquering foreign lands, American citizens are pushing back across the country and really in the American Redoubt. And just this last week in Idaho, the top northern counties, Boundary County, Bonner County, Kootenai County, all had meetings with their board of county commissioners, and they are drafting resolutions that they are going to move forward to put the brakes on this because they've got this resettlement placement non-government organization that's trying to wiggle his way into the North Idaho communities. He's based out of Spokane. And one of the arguments of the counties is saying that are pushing back against this are saying, we just couldn't take on the financial burden from this. That's one of the arguments of the counties. They're trying to be, well, we don't stay away from the hate thing and let's just try to be, well, it's funding. Well, they got an answer for everything. But they're saying, hey, it's already funded. The money comes from the federal government. It's already funded. Well, that's taxpayer dollars, by the way. But here's the thing. With all of the counties, all of the communities that we've seen across America that have had Muslims dumped on their doorsteps, surprise. Oh, but don't worry. It's funded. This is already pre-approved. The funding's already there. It's from the federal government. You're good to go. Oh, okay. Well, I guess we don't want to be hateful. So, we'll bring him in. And then guess what? The money runs out. And the organization that pockets that are making millions of dollars off of placing refugees in rural communities and then running after they pocket the money, they run. And then right after that, the money runs out. And these community leaders are saying, we don't have the money for the infrastructure, fire, police, schools. And then we're having to hire up to, you know, 30 translators because we've got, you know, like 30 languages now in our school that we didn't have a year ago and extra cost. Well, too bad. What are you saying? You don't like them? You hate people that aren't just like you. But even though they say the money's already there, it's not. It's temporary. They've got enough money to dump them on your doorstep and pacify you for a short time. So you need to be aware of that when they tell you the economic part of this is like not even in the equation because it's already funded. Not true. It's misleading. Now, Liberty for All. You guys have heard about Liberty for All. I've talked about Liberty for All before. This is great because in response to the shootings, the Islamic jihadi terror attacks that were carried out on American soil this last week, there's an organization called Every Town for Gun Safety that is marching for peace to get rid of guns. And they're going to be marching in Seattle. Now, Liberty for All is a great, it's an active and effective constitutional conservative issue group out of Central Washington that has a campaign coming up that I'm excited about. It's brilliant. And I wanted to share it with you all. Listen to this. Because even in Seattle, it's perfectly legal to openly carry. This will be a long gun, open carry event. But I'm going to read to you their press release. This is just, sit back and enjoy this. This is their press release. Every Town for Gun Safety, the movement which, according to their website, promotes ending gun violence and building safer communities, will be holding a march on Sunday, December 13th in Seattle. As the group has publicly stated that they fear for gun violence from fanatic pro-gun groups, the Citizens Constitutional Task Force, Liberty for All, or LFA, announced its own plans to attend the march in order to provide close security detail for the demonstration and to thwart any threats of violence from interrupting the march. Now, Anthony Bosworth, an elected board member for the LFA Washington, stated that we disagree with the solutions that Every Town is seeking to end violence here at home. However, we feel it is more important that their right to speak, no matter how we may feel about it, must be preserved and protected. The freedom of speech, even speech we may personally find objectionable, must be preserved. With the numerous incidents of violence being perpetrated by radicalized Muslims recently, we understand and are sympathetic to their Every Town for Gun Safety organization or movement. We understand, we're sympathetic to their concerns about Islamic extremists. We just want them to have a safe event and are willing to ensure that happens, putting our personal safety at risk if necessary, Bosworth went on to say. Is that awesome or what? An anti-gun march is going to be protected, provided close security protection, provided by patriots openly carrying arms, marching along with them to make sure nothing happens to them. Is that awesome or what? Now, this isn't the first time Liberty for All has taken it upon themselves to volunteer to openly carry battle rifles and march along the same route as the Every Town for Gun Safety movement, offering to provide protection for the march. But last year, Every Town organizers canceled their planned event over it. So, it was a success. No violence took place, but it's reassuring knowing that armed citizens were standing by to provide security if the event had gone forward to further ensure no harm would come to the demonstrators. Well done, Liberty for All. Now, that name probably sounds familiar to a lot of the listeners. We've talked about him before, and we've had him on the show and interviewed him. Anthony Bosworth was arrested for openly carrying a rifle at a 10th Amendment speech in front of the federal building. Well, he was arrested and charged with having a firearm inside of a federal building, even though he was out by the sidewalk, out in the courtyard area. They ended up finding him guilty for being in the building because where he was standing, there's an underground parking garage underneath that courtyard area out front. So he was on the building, which still counts as being in a federal building. This was the stretch. Now here's the testimony. Here's a praise, right? The judge, he was prepared to do 30 days. He was supposed to do 30 days. He's basically, be prepared, you're doing 30 days. So Anthony Bosworth shows up last week, prepared to do his 30 days, and the judge said, you are a man of principle. You have acted honorably through this whole thing. He says, and so as a matter of principle, you're not going to do any jail time, essentially is what he said. I don't remember the exact wording. He says, you're a man of principle. So no jail time for you. But he did give him a $250 fine. The judge did, which, hey, if he's going to be a good guy, go the extra mile and wipe the fees. But that was a very cool thing. That was a victory for the Patriots. Isn't that cool? Now, really, like I said, I don't really have a whole lot for news and commentary, but I do want to come back and talk about something that did kind of develop this week. Yesterday, in response to this anti-gun fury that's taking place right now, James Rawls from survivalblog.com posted an open letter that I'm going to read to you when we come back. So stay right there. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. Well, now that the election results are official, I want to say thank you. I could not have achieved an overwhelming 15 percentage point victory without all of you. Together, we challenged the status quo and sent a strong message to those who compromise on principle that wavering is not a strategy, it's wholesale surrender. And surrender will not restore freedom, liberty, and prosperity to our state. The path to freedom means fighting tooth and nail for lower taxes and less government and being uncompromising on the rights to life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. It means defending the Constitution and building coalitions around issues of principle. Together, we will continue to push forward the freedom agenda and the values that made America and Washington great. Please visit us and like us on Facebook at Freedom Agenda Washington and watch for actions you can take to help us clear the path to freedom. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the committee who elect Matt Shea Republican.
We're back, and this is segment two of The Voice of the American Redoubt. Thank you so much for tuning in. This segment is brought to you by SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com, helping Patriots getting situated, relocated to the American Redoubt. They specialize in properties in the northernmost part of the panhandle of North Idaho. James Wesley Rawls from Survival Blog this week put out something he doesn't do very often. He doesn't come out into the open to the keyboard or put pen to paper very often anymore. But occasionally there's an issue that really gets him lit up. This is one of them. It's called Fighting Words, an open letter to the publisher, Arthur Sulzberger. And I want to read this to you. I have a couple of thoughts. It's called Fighting Words, an open letter to publisher Arthur Sulzberger Jr. The New York Times just published the newspaper's first front page editorial in 95 years. It urged America's legislators to outlaw civilian ownership of semi-automatic battle rifles. This editorial twisted words to castigate our militia arms as follows, quote, "They are weapons of war, barely modified, and deliberately marketed as tools of macho vigilantism and even insurrection." The editor went on to urge, quote, certain kinds of weapons like the slightly modified combat rifles used in California and certain kinds of ammunition must be outlawed for civilian ownership. It is possible to define those guns in a clear and effective way, and yes, it would require Americans who own those kinds of weapons to give them up for the good of their fellow citizens. Those are fighting words. Here's his response. Those are fighting words. They've made it clear. These statists want to enact a law forcing civilian disarmament. This would, of course, be enforced under color of law. He says, I have a few terse points for publisher Arthur Sulzberger Jr., editor Dean Beckett, their subordinate editors of the New York Times, and all the other of their ilk. Hint of insurrection. Yea, if you continue using such fighting words, and if the fools in Congress do indeed enact such unconstitutional legislation, then by God, you will spark an insurrection of the sort that has not been seen in this land since 1781. There will be a second civil war, and it will be concluded in a matter of weeks, not years. There will be blood, and that blood will be on the hands of the tyrants, not we the people. If you want my guns, sir, then come and take them. But when you send your thugs to my ranch, tell them to bring plenty of body bags and extra grub, because they'll certainly need them. Sincerely, James Wesley Rawls. He just expressed the sentiments of a growing number of American citizens. This is not just a small sliver, although they are in the minority, but hey, so were the patriots who won America. But the American people aren't stupid, regardless of how Obama treats them, when he says, these types of things shouldn't be responding with, you know, division and we need to do something about guns. Get rid of the, you know, we need to, at a time when Islam is finally actually implementing what it's been saying it's going to forever, and it actually starts slaughtering American citizens and spilling blood on our own streets, then the response to those in positions of office who took oaths to defend and protect this nation and its constitution, their solution is to disarm us. But see, the people know better. Black Friday this year, in the wake of all of this social, economic, political instability and a very unstable world, American citizens broke records. According to the FBI's background check inquiry system, just less than a week later, our nation was hit by yet another Islamic terrorist attack. And the following day, records were broken from the previous Black Friday firearms background checks for purchases, which was a record-breaking day in and of itself. So stay the course, patriots. Stay the course. It is not out of fear. We shouldn't be responding out of fear. I've said this many times. Most of the people that I know have battle rifles and have for years, and they don't chew their fingernails down to the quick, sitting there worried about a boogeyman. They do it because it's just the responsible thing for a patriot to do. It is part of Switzerland's national defense program. Every male has a full auto battle rifle and ammunition for it in his home. I'm of the opinion that every member of a household should have a battle rifle and one basic combat load for it, which is minimum 210 rounds, plus an unopened case of 1,000 rounds of ammo for it in storage. Accessible. That's what every American citizen should have. No. There's something inside of your gut that tells you, I need to, out of a sense of duty, to be ready to protect and defend my family and my community and possibly my country. It is it defies all logic, and it defies our heritage to think otherwise. And to advance a narrative that we should disarm ourselves. While we are under attack, we're being told to disarm ourselves. So you've got to make a decision. Most of you in this audience already has. So good for you. All right, guys, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and we're going to start talking about informants. This is Radio Free Readout. Stay right there. As we've seen during the recent devastating November wind storm of 2015, we know disaster can strike at any time. If you couldn't or shouldn't leave, how safe is your property? How long could it sustain you? Have you considered how you might deal with various threats? Have you planned out your property to get the most out of it for secure and self-reliant living? Those are the questions that Strategic Landscape Design answers. Their services include planning for the primary needs of water, food, energy, and self-defense, providing consulting and design services to help fellow patriots achieve a prepared lifestyle. Whether you need help accessing water, the ability to grow food throughout the year, means to producing renewable energy, and integrating tactical features into your property, take the next step in making yours a secure and productive self-sufficient property. Go to www.strategiclandscapedesign.com. That's strategiclandscapedesign.com.
There is an exodus happening in America today, from cities full of crime and corruption to the rural areas of clean and sustainable living. Like-minded patriots are coming to North Idaho in search of a simpler, self-reliant lifestyle. I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, North Idaho. Sometimes God puts you somewhere for a special reason. For me, I believe it's to help like-minded patriots find safety and security for their loved ones. At Revolutionary Realty, we educate buyers about solar power, growing food, obtaining water, and personal security. I became a realtor in 2008 at the bottom of the real estate market, but not the top. I believe that there is a grand plan, and that I'm just a part of it. My job is to help people discover and relocate to America's Great Redoubt. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us at revrealty.us to learn more. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
All right, welcome back from the break. This segment is brought to you by Katie Armor. Don't forget to use your coupon code to get your discount, and that is Katie Armor. That's C-A-T-I armor.com, as in come and take it. You can also reach me at johnjacob@radiofreeredoubt.com, and the website here is radiofreeredoubt.com. Congratulations to Katie Armor finally getting settled in, and their operation is back up and running after their strategic relocation to the American Redoubt. Good job. Okay, now we're going to continue, and we are going to talk about the topic of informants. Why are we talking about this? Well, because governments are right now trying to make the case for banning or controlling encryption. We've documented that in the last segment that I began talking about this in a couple of weeks ago. So we're going to splice these together and put this up and offer this as a informants segment or a separate addition to Radio Free Readout on identifying informants and how to deal with them. And that's why we've placed so much emphasis on one-time pads and other encrypted encryption methods. And that is bound to, at some point in the future, draw some attention. They are going to be curious about why a certain group of people might be so interested in encryption. Well, we happen to believe in the Second Amendment. And we also believe that if you want to search our person's papers and effects, you should have a warrant based on probable cause. So if I'm going to send a a text to my wife telling her that I picked up the milk and eggs on the way home from the store. I don't want them reading it because it's none of their business. We live in a very pervasive, invasive surveillance society. And so as citizens, we have to assert our privacy. There's an article that stemmed this, I guess, the necessity for addressing this topic, and that was over at The Intercept. And it goes like this. This is the article. As the widespread use of encryption starts to make surveillance more challenging, one of the nation's fusion centers has a proposed solution, more informants. And the article goes on to describe their plans and their intent for building more informant networks. There's also a field analysis report that came from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and it is a unclassified but for official use only document titled Going Dark, Covert Messaging Applications and Law Enforcement Implications. So this is something that they are aggressively, actively working toward circumventing encryption by citizens. Now, in building informant networks is not old. The Stasi, which is the East German secret police, arguably the most brutal, far-reaching, and oppressive public control and citizen tracking systems and public informant systems of all time. I recommend that you read a book called Stasi Land to talk about that, exactly what it was like to live under Stasi. I personally know people who have been detained and arrested and questioned and interrogated by Stasi. Another one was the Cheka, which was, well, it was the organization that later became the NKVD, the secret police of the Soviet regime. Also, later became the NKGB, and then eventually the KGB. It was an extremely brutal or organization, no matter what it was called, and it was known for its atrocities. And if you have not read The Gulag Archipelago, I strongly recommend that one. There's another one also called American in the Gulag. These are great reads for helping you with the proper mindset if you became detained and went into a gulag type of an environment. Some great testimonies of survival and a triumph of mind over the circumstances. And then, of course, we've all heard about the Gestapo from the Nazi German secret police and some of the brutal tactics that they used. All of these organizations, whether it was the Cheka or the Stasi or the Gestapo, and many organizations today, including Department of Homeland Security, are really putting everything toward developing informant networks. And Department of Homeland Security is using organizations like the Stasi as models. In fact, several years ago, there was a lot of information about former East German Stasi officers and former KGB officers being used as advisors on how to develop information networks. Of course, that's all denied, but there's been testimony from congressmen who have come forward saying that they were briefed on these so-called subject matter experts. And one of them was even quoted as saying that apparently this report says that he was impressed with the size of America's surveillance coverage. And he said the German people are understandably a bit more perturbed. The divided Germany of the not-too-distant past saw many people on the eastern side of the wall spend a great deal of time being surveilled by their countrymen. And the recent developments echo that past all too well. And one article says there's a hint of envy in Stasi members Wolfgang Schmidt's discussion of the U.S. government's surveillance infrastructure, saying, you know, for us, this would have been a dream come true, he said, recalling the days when he was a lieutenant colonel in the defunct communist country's secret police, the Stasi. So it's true that they would have just salivated over the thought of having the type of surveillance apparatus is what we have here in the United States, and it's growing all the time. But Citizens are becoming more savvy to this, so they're moving to encryption and privacy methods. But this, of course, is resulting in an increased effort to build up an informant system. Many of you may or may not have heard about a guy by the name of Wolf, William Christopher Wolf, or Christopher Wolf. He lived in Montana, and he was arrested for illegal arms purchases. Now, I want to read part of this article to you, and this is out of Billings, Montana, from Stripes.com. Jurors on Thursday convicted an anti-government activist, key in on that, on firearms charges after authorities said he sought out high-powered weaponry for a coming Second American Revolution. Now, that opening line could be applied to so many of us, couldn't it? Now, I also want to remind the listeners and the agents that are listening in right now that myself and those in my circle that I associate with are patriots. We are not anti-government. We also believe strongly in the Constitution, which is the ultimate supreme law of the land. And we also believe, well, we see plenty of evidence that the government has abrogated their duties in protecting the citizens' rights and staying within the confines of the Constitution. We also believe, as Christian patriots, that government has a specific role and it is instituted by God, as is outlined in Romans chapter 13, which says that we are to obey the government because they are there for our good, because they punish the evildoers and they uphold the righteous. But what we have seen here recently in this trend in this last couple of decades, increasingly so, we have a government that has inverted its responsibilities. It is now punishing the righteous and it is rewarding the evildoers. This is what you call tyranny. And this is what the founders of this country and those of us many generations later who have vowed to stand up against. So we are not anti-government here at Radio Free Redoubt or the AMRON Network or the Patriots networks of anybody that I'm associated with. That's called anarchy, which is antithetical to what the Bible says about the role of government and the necessity of it. Now, William Christopher Wolf of Montana was found guilty of possession of a machine gun and failing to register a firearm after buying an illegal sawed-off shotgun for $720. From whom? It says he bought it from an undercover FBI agent nicknamed Dirty in a truck stop parking lot. But the 53-year-old carpenter and host of an anti-government webcast also acknowledged that he wanted to acquire a flamethrower and spoke of targeting judges, elected officials, and law enforcement in an anticipated conflict between the United States and its citizens. So he faced up to 10 years in prison on each weapons charge. Now, during what was apparently his second meeting with Wolf, the undercover agent named Dirty, okay, don't buy guns from somebody in a truck stop parking lot who goes by Dirty. Okay, he said he was surprised to hear the defendant talk openly of building or attaining a flamethrower capable of defeating police body armor and an armored vehicle that recently had been purchased by the Bozeman Police Department. You're starting to see a trend. You're starting to see how this guy's mouth got him in trouble. Federal defender Mark Warner argued that the undercover agent and a paid FBI informant who encouraged Wolf to buy the Russian-made shotgun entrapped his client, but the Bureau said it paid the informant $9,000. So there's not only an undercover FBI agent, but there is an informant as well that the FBI paid $9,000. He also reportedly compared shooting police officers to shooting gophers and proposed citizens' arrest of judges by a militia-like safety committees. According to authorities and excerpts from the show, played for jurors during a 3-day trial. So this guy had a problem with his mouth. He had a problem with self-discipline. He has a serious problem with OPSEC, and he also has a serious problem with discernment. And I would also remind you that there's no need to buy a sawed-off shotgun from somebody. I mean, physically, you could do it yourself if you thought you had the need for it, but to meet somebody named Dirty in a truck stop to buy an illegally lengthened shotgun, which is, of course, unconstitutional, but right now, at this point in time, it is so easy to modify a weapon during a wartime situation. If the Chinese invaded us, and you got to do what you got to do to enhance the capabilities of your weapons, it's easy enough to do it. Why do it now during peacetime and get yourself thrown in prison? Because how good are you going to be to the Patriot movement when you're in prison? So, making plans to kill police officers and whoever else at this point, in this juncture, is only going to get you in trouble. So you need to have discernment. I mean, Christian patriots, more than ever, we need you. Because there are people making bad decisions. And they think they're trying to save America. But where are they? In prison. Just like the guys that we covered earlier this summer from North Carolina, who had plans. And what'd they do? They also boasted of their plans to the informants of ambushing agents and law enforcement personnel. And then they were acquiring illegal weapons. So they basically formed their own noose and then stuck their own heads in their own noose. Starting to see a pattern here? All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to identify informants, what makes them tick, and what maybe you should be doing about it when you encounter them. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and this is the Voice of the American Redoubt. Don't go away. Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Then let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
I like Bernie. Bernie's an interesting guy. Apparently, some folks really want to see a pot-smoking socialist in the White House. We could get a third Obama term after all.
The world is caught in an era of socialist expansion. Most of the nations are affected. And America is a target. In fact, the number one target of both the socialist and the communist. If we permit our great system to crumble through the apathy of our citizenship, we shall lose not only our freedom, but our prosperity and our still brighter future.
We're back. RadioFreeRedoubt.com is the website if you're listening on the go and you want to check us out. And also, JohnJacob@RadioFreeRedoubt.com is how you can reach me. I have gotten behind on some of the emails, folks. If you've sent me something, you haven't heard a response, you need an answer to something, or you just want to correspond and you haven't heard back from me, wave your hand in front of me, shoot me another little reminder email, and that would be most helpful because the last week and a half has just gotten very, very busy. This segment is brought to you by Werks Holsters. That's WERKZ.com. Great Patriot-owned business. Based out of the American Redoubt, they have a lifetime guarantee on their products, and they're about 2 weeks out on their orders in many cases, maximum 2 weeks out for your magazine holders and holsters. I think what I'm going to do is next week, I am going to talk about dealing with informants, agents provocateur, infiltrators. It's not what you might think. It's got to be handled very carefully. Of course, you know, during peacetime, get a little peacetime rules. We are in peacetime right now. Yes, I know we're at war for America. Okay, but that's not what I'm talking about. But first of all, let me focus on this. You need to understand, first of all, what makes them tick. There's several resources out there. And, of course, it depends on which perspective you're looking at this, whether you are looking at this from a law enforcement type of perspective, military perspective, looking for exploitation against, you know, America for, you know, information and things like that. And then there are infiltration to, you know, try to target you for incrimination and exploitation. So typically your informants, I'm not talking about agents right now, I'm talking about informants. Joe Dirtbag off the street that tries to act like he's one of you and he tries sliding into your organization because he's going to get something out of it. We're going to talk about why and what he could possibly get out of that. And informants are generally motivated by either ideology, he believes in it, he's a true believer, or sympathetic to the cause. And it could be that the enemy's cause, it could be the adversary's cause. So ideology, he believes in informing on you. Ego, he might just get a thrill out of operating in secret and getting away with it. Money is a big motivator for many. Just either greed or they're in some type of financial distress and this is a way out for them. And of course also coercion. Sometimes they could be subjected to blackmail, and so they are being coerced into it. They could have gotten in trouble with the law themselves, and this is a way to maybe have have leniency in whatever trouble that they're in, or even being exonerated, you know, altogether, charges dropped against them if they will cooperate in going after a bigger fish. And this is what happened with Randy Weaver up in Idaho and Ruby Ridge when agents basically duped him into modifying a shotgun by cutting the barrel off to, I think it was a 16th or an eighth of an inch short of 18 inches, which that's pretty chicken crap, isn't it? But what an arbitrary length. Why is it 18 inches and beyond that you're a felony if you don't have a tax stamp? It's a tax stamp violation. So anyway, so coercion could be the other way. So you've basically got ideology, or they're driven by ego, or money, or coercion. Those are your main four categories. And of course, they go deeper than this also. Now, from a law enforcement perspective, I've had just all these different materials and stuff from my past, you know, work life. And, but I found a good article that kind of summarized it all for me. And it's called Confidential Informant Motivation. So I'm going to read through this for you. These are things that you need to be aware of in your dealings with people, especially people that come into your life that, you know, weren't there before. And all of a sudden here they are, and they're trying to take you down a certain path or have certain discussions, dialogues with you. So what could cause somebody to want to be an informant? Well, first is fear. The fear of going to prison is the most common motivation for someone to provide information to the police. Fear is a strong motivator when someone has just been arrested and faces the probability of years imprisonment for criminal activity. I'm reading you from this guy's article because he summarized it really well. Drug investigators will often attempt to convince a freshly arrested suspect to immediately provide information in the hopes of making other arrests in the ongoing investigation. Now, they used narcotics here for this example, but it doesn't have to be narcotics. It could be weapons, like modifying weapons illegally, converting something to full auto, or cutting off, you know, your barrels shorter than the legal limit. This is from Gregory D. Lee's article. Revenge and jealousy. You guys have a big falling out within your organization, within your militia, with your Oath Keeper group, with your church. Revenge and jealousy have historically motivated people to do things they might not otherwise do. Jealousy may stem from love or money, but business disputes between competing drug criminal organizations may prompt revenge. In the patriot community, we have a problem with egos, which we're going to talk about also, or territorialism. When somebody thinks that somebody else coming alongside who is starting to get recognition somehow threatens this guy over here who's been working hard trying to, you know, fight the issues, and this guy over here's got something going too, and people aren't looking completely at, well, Patriot A, they're starting to look at Patriot B, and Patriot B is a threat because Patriot A senses he's not as important, possibly, and it would be nice if he kind of went away. Drug investigators should be wary of informants who seek to eliminate their own drug dealing competition. Nothing prevents a drug agent from using this information to target the competing drug dealer. However, once the competitor is arrested, the drug agent should solicit his help in eliminating the informant's drug enterprise as well. So you get this. Law enforcement are being trained to use one, in this case, we'll talk patriots or militia or whatever. They'll use one to try to inform on the other. And then if they get the guy doing something, this is the problem, guys. If you don't do anything illegal, you don't have to worry about it. But you want to start experimenting with making pipe bombs just to see if they work or some stupid thing like that, right? Okay, now they just rolled you up. But see, then they're going to roll you over on the guy who turned you in, because you know that all the pipe bombs that you just built and got busted for, he's the one that actually showed you how to do it, and he's got a basement full of them. Right, so then they roll you back over to him. So it's going to start working people against each other. Now, I know we're talking about narcotics, but they will try to do this with patriots as well in the future. I mean, right-wing extremists. Another motivator is repentance. Informants often claim they are repentant for past crimes, but this is really rarely the case. Now, this doesn't really apply to us, okay? In the patriot community. Although, what could happen is somebody has something that's illegal. Let's say there's somebody out there who decided to start experimenting with pipe bombs, for example, because they thought, well, maybe that would be the right thing to do. If a war's coming, if China invades next week, we'd be behind the curve. So maybe we should start on some of these projects. Now you think you're going to get busted because you just had a falling out with a couple patriots who knew all about your little pipe bomb making projects. So you run and you pour your guts out saying this was the bad path you were on. You feel bad. You'll never do it again. So you almost like confess, or look what I found in my basement. Somebody must have put them there. Okay. Altruism. People with professional obligations or feelings of responsibility frequently provide information to the police. Examples of altruistic informants include airline employees who see something suspicious about a passenger or his baggage, or express delivery service employees who detect drugs seeping out of packages. These informants are rarely involved in criminal activity, and their usefulness is often limited. Now, in AMRON, the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network, we have one that kind of falls into a couple of categories. The altruist, or the altruism motive, is one that we need to be aware of as AMRON operators. In the ham radio community, there are those who are volunteer enforcers of the FCC rules. They take great pride, so you have ego also, in keeping an eye on the airwaves for the FCC. They're all too happy to report the FCC call signs of those that are breaking the rules, using too much power, operating out of band, using too wide of a bandwidth on a digital mode for the for the band that you're operating in or what have you. Maybe not announcing your call sign, you know, at the end of your transmission. Maybe they swearing or whatever it is. So these guys feel pretty darn important to be able to do that. It's almost kind of like the mall cop syndrome, right? So, but they pride themselves. It's a personal competition with themselves to make sure the airwaves are safe. They're protecting ham radio. So that's why it's especially important. And we keep saying among the Amron operators, guys, don't break the rules. Don't break the laws. Operate within band. Do what you're supposed to right now. Look, when the Chinese invade and our country's in chaos and we have to use communications, then, you know, that's a whole different story. Right now, there's plenty of training you can do and still keep it legal. Watch out for these guys, the altruist and the ego maniac who's out there to try to bust you on ham radio. So that's something that affects us directly. One motivator might be the mercenary. This is one of the things that brought wolf down that I talked about in the last segment. Some individuals provide information or services simply for money. Would they pay him $9,000 to sell this shotgun, illegal shotgun, to this guy, along with an agent named Dirty? These money-motivated informants are usually the most willing to follow an investigator's direction because they are paid based on performance. Although they frequently have a criminal history, this makes them a valuable asset who can introduce undercover investigators to members of criminal organizations. Now, egotistical, which we just started to hint at with the altruistic ham radio FCC volunteer enforcer, egotistical informants often want an aggressive role in an investigation in order to justify as much praise and or money as possible. They will sometimes prolong an investigation unnecessarily to justify more money or praise. An informant in this category may demand payment for services rendered, but in reality, the praise he expects to receive from authority figures is the primary motivating factor. The ego of the informant should not be in competition with the ego of the handling investigator. And oftentimes they are, because investigators, detectives, agents, they are in a very high ego. Their egos run high. Let's put it that way. Very high ego environment. Then there's the James Bond syndrome. Some informants see their role as an opportunity to have their life imitate art. While working as informants, they imagine themselves in a particular police or spy drama. Okay, we won't get into any of that, but that is one. It's the mall cop type syndrome. They think it's just exciting, the adventure, and they feel like a spy. And so they're drawn to be an informant based on that motive. Then there's the wannabe. Usually from a very young age, a wannabe informant has wanted to become law enforcement officer, or for whatever reason, though they did not qualify, and believes that becoming an informant is now the only way to fulfill their life's desire. See a lot of these crossover. Now, what you guys need to do is do a real honest assessment. You have to be brutally honest with yourself, and you got to know your weaknesses and the areas that you're most vulnerable to. And the list above, it might help you with that a little bit, because you're all vulnerable. Everybody can be vulnerable. Government training circulars and counterintelligence for OPSEC training and policies have some guidance also to watch for informants. Things to look for could be indicators. Now, in the military, they had, at least when I was in, it was a program called SAEDA, S-A-E-D-A. That's Subversion and Espionage Directed Against the Army. And this is some of the guidelines that would fall under. Behaviors consistent with informants. Seeks information outside their normal duties. You know, you work over here in this shop, but you're asking about stuff that's going on over there. Why? You don't have anything to do with that area over there, but you're asking a lot of questions. So pay attention for that. Works late and alone when they previously didn't. Next, financial troubles suddenly fixed. Signs of inexplicable wealth or out-of-the-ordinary travel patterns, vacations, day trips, walking through parks when they never used to do that. a computer folder browsing or file access attempts outside their normal patterns. So these are things. Additional indicators for patriots. And I mean active patriots engaged in the fight for liberty, Americanism, our heritage, and the principles in the Constitution. You're a patriot, especially if you're in a leadership position. Anyone who could be targeted for radicalization and infiltration. In other words, they want to try to get you to actually start planning and gathering the materials for blowing up that bridge or making a flamethrower or grenades or whatever it is. Something that's going to get you in trouble. Now, next week, I'm going to talk about vulnerabilities to you and ways that they could try to exploit you. I'm going to get into a couple here. Because there's also something else called an agent provocateur. Now, let's get ahead of myself. Now, I'm not talking to the loudmouths right now. The ones who don't even know what OPSEC even stands for, much less what it means. Or who know better, but just simply don't follow it. Anybody know one of those? Okay. Google it. OPSEC. It stands for Operation Security. People who can't keep their mouth shut about all the gear they have, how many and what type of weapons and ammo they have, how many guys they have on their team, or all their cache sites they've got buried around, or all the plans about taking on the feds and the UN, and they put it all on Facebook or their blog or to everyone that they stumble across at a gun show or at the gun store. In other words, someone who doesn't have enough sense to keep his mouth policed is going to be a prime target for exploitation. And none of what I say will have much effect unless you change right now. But if you're in any kind of organized group, Oath Keepers, militia, assembly, Tea Party group, you could be targeted for infiltration by someone in the name of rooting out extremism. They're looking to see if there's any extreme. There might not be. They might not have any idea. They just want to see if there is. If, you know, for no other reason, they just want to see what's going on. They want to see what's being talked about. So they'll sit in on your Oath Keeper meeting, and they'll sit on your, you know, Patriot, your whatever, Tea Party meeting or 3% meeting or whatever. Agencies don't have the resources to spend on low probability groups. They want success stories. They want to pop in, nothing's going on here, move on, okay? And then they'll work their informants because that's a force multiplier. Now, at this point, there's really no need to fear infiltrators, informants, or undercover agents. I mean, right now, we're not doing anything illegal. One day, though, when all firearms are banned or holding a non-state-sanctioned underground church service is illegal or other subversive activity, such as talking about the Constitution instead of the new global charter, is, you know, if that's illegal, well, we fully intend on breaking the law. Right now, though, we're not forced into that necessary predicament for the most part. Still, information about your organization that's lawful today could be incriminating tomorrow or help them with their case tomorrow. They may be trying to take inventory about group members or organizational structure. Or they may be trying to entice you to do something that's illegal today, such as buying or building sawed-off shotguns or acquiring full-auto weapons, like we just talked about. So you need to know now how to identify informants, agents, and infiltrators. What to look for. For the active patriot today, many of these aren't necessarily informants or even agents. They may just be someone you might consider compromised or vulnerable or at high risk for exploitation. In other words, he may just be an idiot. He's talking about doing stuff that's illegal, but he's really a patriot, right? His heart's in the right place, but he just has no self-control over his mouth. And he's just overzealous and needs a short leash. So, someone who's recently gotten in trouble with the law for whatever other activities, or it puts you at high risk. Someone who has extremely poor OPSEC discipline, they brag, they boast, they talk openly about their plans, their activities, weapons, etc., could become a target for future scrutiny or target for exploitation. Someone who encourages you to make or buy or somehow acquire something illegal. Someone who knows someone with, quote, connections to acquire or make illegal weapons or explosives. A person that has leads and can get the equipment. Hey, I know a guy. No, just between you and me. This dude's got his hands on some stuff, and he said he'd be willing to part with some of it. right? Watch out for that. Run from that. Or the person that you're talking with can provide material support for you to take some action, build a weapon, make explosives, whatever. That's what they're going after. That's what they're trying to get you to do. You know, hey, all of us, we got that little boy in us. We'd love to make things go boom and bang. Okay, you're going to have the discipline to resist the urge. All right, even if you don't mean to go hurt anything, just having that stuff is going to get you in trouble. So just don't go there. Someone who moves very quickly, early on in the relationship, they kind of just come into your life. They start talking about violence. They talk about we should start planning now, building now, training, acquiring this and that, equipment or, you know, components we should get. Okay, well, this person, you have no previous relationship with them. And, of course, that person always knows a close, trusted friend with connections that can get his hands on stuff, whatever it might be. Okay, very dangerous. Someone who appears out of nowhere. You know nothing about the person and suddenly is always around, stopping by, acting like your best buddies and trying to lead discussions toward things that we see people getting arrested for. Someone who talks a lot about carrying out direct action, combat operations, specifically toward police, elected officials, judges, that should be a no-brainer for you. Or if they just throw that out there to attempt to elicit a reaction from you to see if you'll bite. And oftentimes it's presented to you very subtly. Now, it's not always a guy either because, well, we're guys and it could be a girl. So it's not just a guy posing as a fellow patriot. Look, if you're some middle-aged guy wondering if you still got it, some attractive young woman says all the right things. She likes guns. She's mad at the government. Her father was a Green Beret who has a team of guys who are planning to lead a bunch of spec ops guys as soon as the resistance begins. And you remind her of the kind of guy that would be on her dad's team. You know, the spec ops type. All right. This exploiter is very dangerous. And the intent is to get you into a compromising situation or attempt to entice you maybe into an affair or exploitation of some sort, such as blackmail. Secondly, to destroy you through accusations of rape. It could be a temporary distraction. Let's say you're on a business trip and some hottie sits down next to you in the hotel lobby and she starts chatting up with you, maybe flirting with you, or invites you to the lounge for a couple of drinks or to her room. Well, in that scenario, you run to your room to bust the guys back at your room trying to download data from your laptop or install surveillance equipment in your room. Or just run to your room just to avoid the ambush and all the hidden cameras in her room. This is called Operation Honey Pot. It's one of the oldest tricks in the book, and they still use it because it works. Now, I'm not saying every girl that smiles at you is setting up a trap for you, but if you're married and some girl smiles at you, smile back and keep walking. Look, you still got it. All right, you're a stud. No need to prove it. If you're in a position at all, an organization, network, or whatever, be smart and don't put yourself in a situation where you can be exploited. How to avoid being targeted for – this is an extended fourth segment. How to avoid being targeted for infiltration or exploitation, or at least minimize it or minimize the effectiveness of the adversary's efforts. One, don't place yourself in a compromising situation that could lead to coercion, where they can coerce you. If you don't do something illegal, such as cut the barrel off your shotgun down to 16 inches, or try to buy some stolen hand grenades or whatever, they're wasting their time and will move on. Don't talk about things openly. Here's the conundrum for us as patriots. We need to be bold. We need to stand and at times send a strong message that we will stand for American principles regardless of the cost. Sometimes we have to simply count that cost and weigh it in with the consequences. Good men, good God-fearing men stood at the bridge at Concord and Lexington Green. They knew they'd be marked men for doing it. But they decided that it was time to stand. The same thing happened at the Bundy Ranch. They had elected officials, patriot organization leaders, pastors, bloggers, standing with the Bundy family. But they also had teeth, armed citizens, standing to bring physical resistance to the situation if it was needed. I guarantee a couple of things. One, Without the armed citizens standing their ground, ready to back the Patriot leadership, the federal government would have marched in and taken the Bundy Ranch down. Two, the federal government has a database of every individual there, whether they were armed or not. That database will be used to varying degrees by the government. So there was a cost, even if not immediately, but that was the cost that had to be measured by everyone involved in that situation. And sometimes that's required of us, because if we don't, and we don't accept them and measure that cost and accept it, we lose anyway. But see, they stood ready to respond when the moment came. It's not necessary for everyone with tactical team to, you know, have your own I'm so cool website for your team. When you're laying out all the capabilities, training, unit strength, and everything else out there, don't do that. Because you just basically indicated that one of your motivators is ego. That's what I'm socking away in my mind is ego drives you, which makes you exploitable. Now, in the case of the Bundy Ranch incident, you have another element to be watchful for, the agent provocateur. That's the one posing as one of you, but he's always trying to escalate the situation, usually trying to prematurely incite violence or some other type of illegal activity. Now, the agent provocateur, it's different from an infiltrator. He can easily be confused with the Patriot idiot. Now, he's not any part of the adversary's camp. I'm talking about the Patriot idiot. But his actions bring about the same effects. Now, this is where strong, well-defined, organized leadership comes into play. The guy who wants to start kicking butt and taking names and screams for everyone to follow him, when everyone knows he's going to get a lot of heads broke, he can derail the public information or the public perception campaign that more level heads are trying to accomplish, you know, which is equally important as the tactical and the scheme of maneuver campaign. Now, that's a hard challenge for the Patriot leadership. You need folks to be full of vim and vinegar and ready to charge forward when necessary and still be able to keep them under control beforehand until they're needed for that. An agent provocateur will always try to incite and escalate the situation, especially when your side is keeping the coolest head. The agent provocateur will go around the leadership. He'll go around them, like circumvent them to undermine them, fomenting dissent among the ranks. He'll be expressing dissatisfaction with the lack of progress, his disdain for weak or cowardly leadership, for not taking bolder action, these kind of things. The agent provocateur efforts will become more pronounced as the leadership on your side seem to be making the most progress or on the edge of a breakthrough in negotiations or something else that's favorable for your side. Like I said, an overzealous, well-meaning patriot can have the same effect. This is why command and control, a hierarchy, a well-defined rules of engagement, and a chain of command are established is so important. The whole group has to protect that and quickly expel anyone who disrupts or fails to comply with that. Simply because it's nearly impossible sometimes to distinguish a provocateur from a zealot. But both of them are equally as destructive to your cause or for your mission. And that couple that executed those two police officers down in Las Vegas after the Bundy Ranch incident and laid the Don't Tread on Me Gadsden flag over top of one of the police officers. The media ran like crazy with that. But what they didn't tell the rest of the world was that couple had just been kicked out of the Bundy Ranch security group of patriots because they were like five marbles short of a whole bag. And they were Looney Tunes. They said, these people are dangerous. You're out of here. Sorry, you don't fit in. You're going to have to leave. And they did. And of course, what happens? They go off the deep end. The same people that were protesting with the Occupy, left-wing Occupy movement a couple years prior. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and break it off there. And I want to encourage you guys to tune in next week. And I believe I'm going to dedicate a whole segment to it with finishing up on dealing with, recognizing, dealing with, and avoiding infiltration, exploitation, and what to do with an informant when you think you have one. And how to make sure that you have one. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up, guys. Right afterward is going to be Partisan Radio. Tune in, because this is a youth, next generation of Partisan oriented, volume 27. And at the end of it, well, codename Annie has a secret message for the youth if you're 16 years or younger. Tune in. Tomorrow afternoon, I will also be uploading a contest entry audio file to be added to that, to the Partisan Radio Volume 27 tomorrow. So check that out. But tonight, for the kids, get your pencils out, get them sharpened, and get your notepads and get ready. We got that posted over at RadioFreeRedoubt.com and Amron.com, talking about the one-time pad exercise where we are giving away a 200-shot range model repeater. Yeah. With a compass in the stock and a thing which tells time. Okay. You guys have a good one. God bless. Thanks for tuning in, and thank you all for your prayers and support. Have a blessed week, and we'll talk to you next week for episode 1542, rounding out the year. It's already December. It'll be the middle of December. Wow. All right. You guys take care. God bless. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.